Welcome to another episode of The Art of the Punt. Today we're joined by the ratings guru, Dan O'Sullivan. How are you, mate?
Hi, Rich. Really good.
So you're well known to Wolf Den audiences and also racing.com audiences, but as a bit of a refresh and for people who might not know a bit about you, can you just, in about 60 seconds, let us know how you got into the game and what your background in the game is at the moment?
Yeah, so I just started as a hobby punter. I mean, in my old job, I was studying at uni. I was working as a trainee accountant. I had a social day at Rose Hill Races one day. I went along and just fell in love with it, like the vibe on the track, the horses. I grew up with horses, not race horses, but I was familiar with horses. Just the colour, the excitement, the betting ring, things like that. I just fell in love with it, and that was obviously on a Saturday. The next day, I took myself off to Westfield Parramatta to a big bookshop and looked for books on racing. I was lucky enough to stumble across the Don Scott books, and yeah, just started from there, like learning everything I could, and just built from there, sort of learnt the sort of Don Scott way. Obviously had no idea at the time, I was a complete beginner. In my studies in accounting and strategic management, there's a lot of focus on analysing things methodically, decision-making frameworks, models, all that sort of stuff, and I found that was a good natural fit for racing. So I just kept going and just gradually developed ideas and principles. The internet was in its infancy in sort of mainstream, especially for racing. Found a few good resources and chat groups there where I learnt off some more experienced people and just built my ideas and form study and things like that. And that was around 1995. So probably went about 8-9 years. And then, just circumstances in life sort of saw me able to sort of transition full-time as a shareholder in a business called TRB, which I still own now, and also just punting every day, and I've just built from there. That was 20 years ago now, so it's been a long time.
And so you're well known for your ratings, and your ratings are used by a lot of people in the industry, different parts of the industry, breeding, trainers, punters, all that kind of stuff, even jockeys to a degree maybe. But what are ratings in terms of horse racing?
So ratings are just really a numerical way to express the performance of a horse. So in my case, it's primarily concerned about the strength of the race, the beaten margin, and the weight carried. I don't factor in any things like bad luck or bias or things like that in ratings. So the higher the number, the better the performance, basically. And it's not something new. I mean, ratings have been around a long time. As I mentioned, Don Scott, a guy just before him, Rem Plant, was also big on that. And then in more modern times, names people might know like Mark Reed and Dominic Byrne and Rob Waterhouse are sort of synonymous with a ratings-based approach to racing.
I guess the idea is that ratings arm you as best as possible to work out what horse is going to win a race. It's never a completely true science, is it?
But no, they're just a tool. I mean, ratings for any run, a number is just an estimate, like a point estimate. There's obviously a range of or margin for error, if you like. So in a two-year-old race where no horse has had a start before, and let's say it's on a day where the wind's howling and it's hard to get a reading on times and sectionals sort of being uniform across the day, there'll be a greater margin for error than let's say you're looking at rating a race like the Cox Plate where the form's well exposed, there are all good horses and things like that. So they're just one tool that you use that can help add clarity and confidence to lining up the form and also make it a lot more efficient when you've got numbers there as your starting point instead of looking at a race and thinking, oh, I remember that race at Randwick. Oh, yeah, that horse won it. Oh, how strong was that? How was the time on the day? You know, this process all takes time. So when you've got ratings and a system for maintaining that, it makes doing the form a lot more efficient and a lot easier.
Obviously, ratings are going to form a big part of the principles and processes you go through for doing the form and eventually having a bet. So I believe you've got 11 principles that you rely on when you're trying to price up and or, you know, work out what the best winning chances in a race are. Is that correct? You've got 11 of them?
Yeah, so it's not any reason for 11. It's just when I sort of map out or write down the approach that I take to form. So I'm a detailed sort of form person. So I look at each race as a unique event. I'm looking at things like, you know, map, standard to win a race, the form of each horse, how well suited they are, all those type of things. And looking to work out the chances from there. So there's some science in that. There's a lot of art form as well in terms of making judgments and assumptions. I, over the years, have been fortunate or put a lot of time and effort into building tools and analytical things to research history, research form factors, and try and build principles in doing form that are backed up by data. So while I don't rely purely on data to make my selections, a lot of the ideas and rules and principles I use to assess form are based on understanding. A really simple example would be a lot of people are drawn to wins at the distance or wins at the track and things like that, whereas I know from analysing data that those stats are totally meaningless, and if anything, there's a little bit more value in horses that have never won at the distance or won at the track in terms of how the market behaves. So when doing form, I don't pay any attention to that. I'm sort of looking beyond that. Same as different trainers, strengths and weaknesses in different trainers, form angles about maps, where horses settle, whether they're settling further forward or back than the start before. All these sort of things you can research with data to build mental models in your brain, and then applying those over the top of just your general form analysis approach. Sort of, so kind of blending. I try and blend the art of form analysis with a little bit of the science and data and try and get results that way.
Are you happy to unpack the 11 for us?
The first thing I start off doing the form with ratings is just trying to understand the standard that you need to win a race. So when you've got each horse's history, their ratings, their recent form, their best form, especially in the last 12 months. I'm scanning through that, trying to get a feel for what level do you need to run to win this race. Mm-hmm. So generally, in any given race, there's at least one horse that runs to their sort of better level of form, even if it's very hard to tell which horse that might be. So from that, you can get a really good feel and say, well, I can't imagine that anything less than 98 is going to win this race. And for me, that's an important starting point. Because then it becomes about assessing horses based on their history and their potential to run to that figure. That approach and process is more prevalent in races with exposed form and better class races. Obviously, if you're betting out wide in maidens with less exposed form, it's a little bit harder to determine the winning standard. But where it's possible, that's my starting point to base the analysis on.
Okay, and then we move on and you go to position, running and pacemakers and things like that?
Yeah, that's a really key aspect of doing the form. I think map, positions in running, speed and race shape has a huge bearing on the race. It's obviously very hard to predict with high probability of success. I mean, we all know that if you could just back every leader in the race and get the price before the race, I mean, you'd make a fortune, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking to map horses, look at where they've settled in the past, where they're likely to settle here. Most importantly, how much work they might need to do to find their preferred position or a likely position, comparing that to previous starts. So you might find a horse last start that had to work 200, 300, 400 meters before it found its position, relaxed and was able to switch off. And today it lines up in a race where the structure of the map, the draw, the speed of runners around it mean it's just going to lob into that position without doing any work. So you look at that as a more favourable map. You get horses that may have drawn inside and were able to use that barrier to settle in a nice position. And typically when they draw wider, they get much further back. So all of those type of factors. So I'm not only looking to put a map together for this race, but I'm also comparing the scenario that each horse is going to face, especially the main chances, compared to its recent runs, especially its last start, and noting little angles there about horses that look like they might be more suited or less suited by the map, and also the race shape. I mean, pace is very difficult to predict with accuracy, but you can get it right often enough to be an important factor in your analysis.
And moving on to the understanding of the exposed talent and potential talent of each horse.
So again, with the benefit of ratings, I'm looking through in my software to, especially the main chances, starting with the main chances, just looking at their rating history, how many starts they've had, their trajectory, what level have they run to so far, under what circumstances was that, are they still on the up in their career, are they still on the up this prep, making a special note of horses that I think have got better than average upside potential to run to new peaks. I think that's a very important factor in racing. And if you can make those judgments better than the average person, then there's potential edges there because it's something that is more difficult for the market to factor in. And it's also much more difficult for the big syndicates and models that drive a lot of the betting market to factor those sort of things in. So it's one area that a form analyst that's focusing more on the individual event can look to gain an edge. Yeah.
Moving on to recent runs, explain that for us.
Yeah, so I many, many years ago sort of developed this, again, talking about, from studies, sort of thinking in models of how to line up recent form. So in my mind, I'm thinking about when I'm looking at the recent form of a horse, like how well suited or how fit was it? How suitable was the distance, the track condition? Where did it settle? How suitable was the pace? What type of run that it had? How did the market expect it to perform? And then looking at how it actually performed and sort of getting an idea of, was the horse suited and it ran well, suited and it ran poorly, unsuited and it ran well? You sort of get the idea. And that helps to put each horse's form into context, because you can look at a horse and say, well, yeah, one horse was beaten 2.5 or 3 lengths, and let's say it ran a 90 rating. But if that horse was third up at the right distance, had a good map, good race shape, had every possible chance, that's a lot different to a horse that was second up, still short of its best, had a checkered run, and is going to be better suited in this race. So it's important to put context for me around the form of a horse in terms of interpreting it, in terms of how well suited that horse was and how it was expected to perform. Yeah.
Visual tools, I guess you're referring to replays and different things like that?
Yeah, so I'm not a punter that watches replays post-race like a lot of people do. I prefer to do it when I'm doing the form, so then I'm just focused on the horses that I'm interested in rather than watching a range of replays that might not have any bearing. Like, I don't think it's an efficient use of time for me. So I'm normally watching the last one or two starts of key chances. I'm looking for things like gate speed and how quickly horses muster. For me, the idea of when a horse jumps well out of the gates and can then build speed quickly is a sign that a horse is fitting well and, you know, sort of near its best. Often you'll see horses that do jump well, but then they're restrained, so that's still jumping well. It's not just all about settling position. Looking at, yeah, what sort of trip a horse has, how easily did it find its position and switch off? Is it over racing? Is it relaxing? All of those type of things. And then the two most important things for me, especially watching replays of past runs for chances, is acceleration. I think that's a massive aspect of
Bentina.
Racing. Yeah, well, there's a great example. Does the horse have some acceleration or are they more one-paced? So one-paced horses are the biggest trap bets in racing, because often what I mean by that is when the pressure goes on in a race, they're horses that either sort of lose a little bit of ground on the pack, or at best they just sort of hold their ground. And one thing you're looking for when you're analysing that is who are the horses around them and what are their chances. So if you've got a horse that you're looking at as a chance in this race and you watch the replay, it's 4 lengths off the lead, they straighten up, the pressure goes on, and it's just holding its ground with a heap of other horses around it that are 10, 20 to 1 in the race. And then maybe that horse is just making up ground when the race is over. That's more a one-paced horse. They're huge traps as betting prospects, because they lack the acceleration to put themselves into the race as winning chances speed, when it counts. And their form might read well, beaten a length and a half, you know, beaten half a length. But if they're not able to put themselves into the race with a chance to win at the time that it needs, and they're just making up ground and making their impression when the race is over, then, you know, beaten a length in that scenario is not as appealing as a horse that might have, you know, quickened, put itself in the race, and then just found one or two better on the day. At least that horse was there in the race with a winning chance at the 200, at the 100, whatever it was, at the 50 metre mark. I've avoided many, many losing bets over the years from horses that everything seemed to stack up well, rated well. And then when I watch the replay, I think, geez, that horse was a bit one-paced. Like, I don't really like that. On the contrary, horses that have acceleration, it's the key to winning many, many races. So again, very few horses have standout acceleration, but you're just looking for horses that can quicken when they're asked. Maybe they just find half a length, sometimes more on the pack around them. And even if they don't win, that's a positive sign. So that's a big tip, I think, in doing form. It was probably only something I really focused on about 10 years ago, I would say. So I was betting full-time for 10 years before that, before I really sort of cottoned on to how valuable it was. And since then, just that principle alone has been like enormously valuable in taking form to that sort of next level. And the other thing is late strength. I'm a huge fan of late strength, what horses are doing late. There's flashing light runs where horses are running home and they appear strong, but then when you look at the figures, they're actually running slow, just the horses in front of them are running slower. Then there's horses genuinely finishing fast, or just horses that visually you see when you really focus in on the replay that you just look at them through the line, they're still stretching out well. They look like they're still full of running or got something to offer versus horses that, you know, look absolutely maxed out to do what they're doing. They're shortening stride. The leg speed looks a lot slower than, you know, other races. And when you watch a few, you sort of pick that up pretty quickly. And again, I've found a lot of successful bets, horses that I generally liked, but just, you know, understanding and seeing and feeling that they had that late strength gives you that next level of confidence, especially if you're looking to bet up on good chances. So, yeah, I'm generally reviewing the replays of the sort of main chances and just looking for little angles there that might help me to sort and filter out the chances a bit more.
All right, fascinating stuff. We're halfway through Dano's principles of doing the form. We'll be back after this break to unpack the second half. All right, welcome back. We're here with the ratings guru, Dano. We're halfway through your principles of form analysis. Let's keep rolling. We're up to how suitable the conditions and setup of this race is.
We've just gone through, you know, interpreting the past form, looking at how well set up a horse was in its past runs, how it performed. And then, as I mentioned earlier, you're looking to line that up in today's race. So how set up is a horse for today? You know, is it going to be fitter than last start? Is it better suited by the distance, the track condition, the map, the race shape? Is it, you know, still on the up in its preparation or on its in its career with the potential for new peaks? And trying to get an idea of the horses that are potentially best suited by the setup of this race, and especially those that are much better set up than previous runs. Mm-hmm. There's lots of examples of horses that, you know, might be racing okay, but there was an example a few weeks ago of a Chris Waller horse in a staying race, went 1500 first up, 2000 second up, was running okay, 2400 third up, which still didn't look like a great platform, ran okay. Was then going 2400 again fourth up, and it really set up that now it was kind of ready to, sure, to produce a peak or improve on its past ratings. It was like $9 in early markets and ended up starting 550 or something like that and won. And the point being not that the horse won the race, because they don't obviously win anywhere near 100% of the time, but the fact was that that setup angle was something that the early markets especially sort of underestimated.
Sure.
That what the horse had done so far, it was, you know, well set up coming into this race to produce a peak performance. So yeah, they're the type of things that I'm looking for.
Cool. All right, let's move to a big one, trainer and jockey angles.
Yeah, I mean, trainers and jockeys are keen racing. Most people know that. In terms of angles that I'm looking for, one is jockey bookings. So again, using a Chris Waller example, if a horse is early in its prep and it's got a lower profile jockey in Sydney riding, that's a lot different than if James McDonald's booked. If a horse has had two runs with one of those types of jockeys and then James McDonald hops on board, that's a signal of intent that they expect the horse to improve and all of those type of things. Regardless of trainer, just jockey bookings generally. So upgrades, downgrades in jockeys, they are athletes. There is a difference in talent between them. There are many good underrated jockeys, and I use data and stats as well as my own just watching of races to sort of try and gauge them. So jockey bookings I think are important. And the main thing with trainers is me is trying to ascertain whether a stable's in particularly good or bad form. They do go through cycles. It's not just about whether they're training winners. I love finding a stable where you just start to notice over a couple of weeks that they've got a lot of horses that are running well, even if they're not winning. Maybe they're running better than their SP suggests. They seem to be strong late. They're overcoming tough runs and running well. And you just get a bit of a feel that this stable has their horses going well. And that's the type of thing that if you like a horse in a race or half like it and you've got that sense about a stable, it gives you that next level of confidence to sort of push the horse forward as a betting prospect.
Yeah. All right, moving along. What is the potential range of performance for the horse in this race?
Yeah, so once I start, you know, getting a feel for the chances, I'm looking to forecast in a rating sense the range that each horse could run to. I mean, you can use a number and say, I think this horse will run 98, but being more balanced, I'm saying, okay, the horse could run anywhere between 95 and 99, and this sort of gives me a feel for, you know, most likely where it might land. And you're purely just looking to, you know, then line the horses up on their range. You're overlaying other factors like how variable or confident. I mean, you get some horses like Mr. Brightside that just pings to the same mark plus or minus a couple of points almost every start. You get other horses like Deny Knowledge, who's very up and down on a day, can run some strong ratings. And other times she's gone at the 300. So,
sure.
Trying to understand firstly the range and then secondly the variability or the risks in a horse sort of hitting that range and how volatile their performances are.
Okay. Identify the key chances in the race and their profile.
Yeah, so again, it's just an extension of what we were just talking about. So once you start to understand all of those previous factors, I'm looking to get a bit of an order to the chances. Okay, this is my top pick, this is my second horse, third horse, and so on. How competitive the race is you know, the top two well clear of the others? Is there a standout at top? What level of, you know, uncertainty there is among those chances? And it's at this point I'm starting to get a feel for how the chances fall out in a race. You've usually got a feel for what the current betting market is, and then you're starting to get, you know, vibe, are there any possible bets in this race? Yeah.
All right, moving on to a big one. It's a hard one, but if you can get it right, it's a big advantage. Creating assessed prices.
Yeah, this is a hot topic, really.
Yeah.
Most races I don't price, right? It's we were taught back in the day that, oh, you do a race, you create your prices, and then you're looking for the overlays. You do not need to do that as a punter. Yeah, I know many, many people, Kings is one. I'm another that, you know, rarely prices races as such. I mean, I do for the Saturday races because it's enjoyable. It's a good skill to develop. But you don't need to create assessed prices. The very, very vast majority of people overestimate their skill and ability to accurately price horses. It's only the people at the tip of the form analysis spear that can do that well. It's a different skill to being able to study the form. And I think most people are far better off spending their time focusing on just understanding the race and your judgment, why you like one horse over another, what are the factors that underpin that, and how does that relate to the market. You don't need to price the horses. If the market has one horse favourite and you think another horse is that top pick in the race, you don't need to know what the prices are. It's going to be value, in the vast majority of cases. You'll do much better work honing your ability to make those judgments and understand the actual reasons why a horse might be over or underestimated by the market than you will trying to develop some sophisticated numerical algorithm that comes up with a price that you then fool yourself into thinking, well, my algorithm says it's $3.50, so it is a $3.50 chance. Yeah. Mm.
And the last one, what is the level of uncertainty around the key chances and other factors in the race?
Yeah, so this is a big one for me in particular, and not all races are equal. And as I said at the start, I like to treat each race as a unique event. So there are races where you can do the form and there's minimal uncertainty and there's minimal assumptions. The form is pretty well exposed. Things like distance, track condition, all of those factors are reasonably well exposed. That doesn't mean only those races are the best betting opportunities, but at the other end of the scale, you've got races where there are many horses in the race that could explode to a new peak. They're untried at the distance. Maybe there's a wet track. Maybe all the top chances map back and the longer price horses are up on the lead, and maybe there's a lack of pace. There's all these factors that create uncertainty and risk in the race in terms of your predictions being accurate. So I'm always checking each race for what those levels of uncertainty are. Mm-hmm. What assumptions am I making about each horse? Because each of those assumptions represent possible areas that you could be a little bit out, and that reduces the reliability of your forecast. So a little bit of uncertainty and taking calculated gambles is good in terms of value hunting, because if everything's too predictable, you've got to ask yourself, where is there an edge? But if there's too much uncertainty, then I've found in my experience of records and going back and reviewing things that they're best races to pass. One of the keys to good betting is avoiding mistakes and avoiding scenarios where there's greater than average sort of volatility in the outcomes. So yeah, races that have too much uncertainty where I find myself making too many assumptions about the key chances, I'm just looking to put a line through those.
All right, that is Dan's 11 principles of how he does the form. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the all-important art of putting the money on at the best odds possible. All right, welcome back to the Art of the Punt here with Dan O'Sullivan. We've got a few more quick questions for you, mate, before we let you go and wrap things up. I alluded to it before the break. So competent form analysis only takes you so far. It's incredibly important as well to try and bet at the top of the market as possible. Very hard to do to always bet at the top of the market. How do you attack that and how much importance do you place on it?
Yeah, I mean, getting the right price is critical. I mean, we've spoken about it before in the den. Numerous people have spoken about it. If you're taking 270 instead of 290, might not seem like that big a deal. Who cares? It's only one bet. If you do that consistently, that's 7.5%, right? Mm. That's the difference between winning and losing, or a very moderate result and a very good result.
Mm. And if you want to make good money, the punt, you've got to turn over a bit, don't you? You know,
100%.
And it's amplified the more you turn over.
That's right. I mean, if you're making 7.5-8% on a high volume of bets, you're flying,
like, for sure.
Absolutely flying, yeah. Right? So yeah, it just comes down, you've got to put the effort in to try and get the best price. So have your account set up, look to leverage all the best products you can get, whether it's best of the best, if you're still able to get bonuses and money back and all those sort of stuff. All of those things add to your edge.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be lazy.
Yep.
Don't just say, well, it doesn't really matter, I'll just take whatever price, because it's literally the difference between winning and losing. As I said, 20 cents here and there, you're talking 5, 6, 8, 10% in some cases. So yeah, put the effort in, set up your accounts, take advantage of the best prices you can get. You're not going to get it all the time, but it'll make a massive difference to your result. Yeah.
Can you explain the overlay trap?
Yeah, just quickly, it's this thing, I touched on it before, that we brought up believing that, well, you just set your price and anything above it's an overlay, anything below it's an underlay. I mean, that's, as I said, it's people do take that approach and win off it. It's really only the people at the very tip of the spear doing that. For the average person, it's, I think, well beyond their scope to do well. I mean, this idea that you've priced something 250 and it's only 230 or 240, so you're not going to back it, but you're going to take 750 about something you've got $6. I mean, that's just crazy, right? Mm. Like, if any, as an individual, you really think that you can differentiate between a 40 or 41% winning chance and a 43% winning chance in the market, or a 14% versus 16% chance. I mean, it's, you know, as I said, people can do it and your prices can be accurate enough so that you do win. But the very, very vast majority of people will be far better suited and far better served by trying to understand the reasons why. Like, why is the horse value if you've priced it? Not just because that's what your algorithm says. Like, what are the reasons? Are there things about that horse that you can see or believe the market's estimated, underestimated? Or are there other key chances in the market that you think the market's gotten wrong and that's why your horse is an edge? To bet well, you need to, you know, the vast majority of people need to understand, and we're best served, as I said, understanding why they like a horse, why it's value, not just because their price says that it's value, so you should bet. That's a way to go broke. Yeah.
And just finishing off, you mentioned the company that you're a shareholder in, TRB.
Yep.
Got a couple of products which you think can help people with their punting, improve their punting. Yep. Might just have a quick chat about them. The first one is Top Rate. It's a new product that you've launched quite recently. What exactly is Top Rate?
Yeah, so it's a form analysis platform for people that are more serious about doing the form. There's a few products like that in the market. We've got an existing product that's been around for 20 years as well. But Top Rate essentially gives you form, ratings, map, video comments, race shape data, the ability to record your own comments, do post-race analysis, all of those things for someone that's looking to take a more serious approach to their form. It's what I use to do the form every day.
And BetSmart's a bit of a watered-down version of Top Rate, is it, in the sense that it does a lot of the selection for you? It's more of a tipping service, is that right?
Yeah, so it's more just a product for people that don't have time or the inclination or maybe the knowledge to do the form to a great extent. We just provide for Sydney and Melbourne on a Saturday, maps, comments, prices, and a few profile indicators around betting for all of the races, as well as other black type races in New South Wales and Vic. So it's really just something like a PDF that people can take, read through, get a feel for a race, either take the sort of strategies there in terms of betting or come up with their own bets. It's very reasonably priced, like $29 a month, sort of trying to keep it affordable for the average person. We've got a, you know, good record, go through ups and downs like everyone, that's for sure. But yeah, it's more a finished product for people that just want something they can take to the races or use at home to find some good bets.
So that wraps us up for another episode of The Art of the Punt. And we appreciate you watching and your support. And we will see you again soon. Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.